Good evening and welcome. I'm Kelly Richards, CEO of the All Access Group and the host of All Access Radio. As a highly sought-after consultant, super connector, trusted advisor, celebrity wrangler, and thought leader, I connect innovators and influencers between Silicon Valley, Hollywood, and Madison Avenue. As a trusted advisor, I transform the quality of people's lives. And I'm also the author of the best-selling ebook, The Magic and Moxie of Apple, An Insider's View. Tonight's guests on the show are colleagues of mine, legendary collaborators Karen Stever and Frank Greiner from Canada. Based in Ontario, Karen's a multi-talented singer, songwriter, musician, producer, and animator. She has more skills than that. We'll get to some of them as well beyond that. In 2008, she released her first album, Playground Isolator, which was co-produced with Frank, who has worked with the likes of Rob Zombie, the Dandy Warhols, and The Cult as an engineer and producer. Karen and Frank's latest collaboration together is a phenomenal 12-track concept record called Idiot Savant, which was released last summer, and it tells the story of Ian, a 9-year-old boy whose inner genius is lost on those around him, in the hopes of inspiring listeners to reclaim their inner child and return to the playground. Welcome to the show, Karen and Frank.
So glad to be here. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah, thanks for
really
having me.
Really great to have you both on. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. I think the way I want to start is by asking about, you know, trusted advisors in general. We know they're important, and I'm curious who some of your mentors have been along the way and whether you've ever mentored others. Would each of you consider the other a mentor to the other?
I think it's really important to remember that being a mentor doesn't mean just mentoring other people, but I think it's important as you go on your journey to remember to be mentored. And I think, Kelly, you're one of these people in this crazy business that does continue to learn from others, and you seek out the highest mentors that are in the business. And we really just got away from looking for role models altogether, and we just seem, I think we're more interested in just trying to be like whoever's famous on the cover of the latest magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget just to look for people who are actual role models who just make us better people. And I would say probably the first half of my life was women. I was very fortunate to have my dad's mom live with us, and I had a very exceptional mother. I lost my dad at a young age, so it was a lot of women around. But then the second half of my life was kind of a combination of learning what not to do from certain people. And then, of course, partnering creatively with Frank. He's definitely become a... Frank, is this going to sound like a giant ass-kissing session?
It's okay.
Frank definitely became a great mentor to me, especially in the creative arts, because he's a very methodical counterpart to my insanely scattered brain. And as far as people that I've mentored, that I don't know. I think it's just about being a really good role model, especially to people who are entering this business, the music business, and Frank and I have worked with a ton of musicians, but also people who have suffered from depression. I want to feel like if somebody is bending my ear, that I'm responsible to that. I really want to be a good friend where I can. In a lot of cases, that does mean just listening.
And I think you do a great job of that in your music and in your blogs and your social media communications.
I love people, Kelly. That's the difference.
Clearly.
I actually do genuinely like people, and I try not to stay right in the nastiness of this business, which you are so centered in. And it's
business for women in particular, that's for sure. It's a hard business for anybody, but that's why it is so important to have people you trust that advise you, especially for women in the music industry, I would say.
Yeah, I think, and I've been really fortunate, though, just being a woman in the business. I don't feel like I've been a victim that way. I feel like I've had a ton of men who have actually, you know, just the people I've worked with in studios, and Frank included, who have really protected me. I feel like I've been in this layer of just awesome people. I've maybe been fortunate that way. But
how about hearing from Frank on this topic? I'd love to hear your input on this.
Yeah, no, I've had several like pivotal people who are mentors of mine, especially in the earlier years when I started in the music industry, like in the early 90s. Guys like Jim Scott and Garth Richardson really, you know, kind of, it's one thing to have the knowledge, but the other part of it is to share it willingly and do so in a like kind of a unconditional way. And a guy like Jim Scott, who mixed and engineered stuff from like Chili Peppers to Tom Petty to Slayer, like everything, he was a pivotal mentor for me, not only because he's great at what he did, but he was also showed me that you can be, you can have balance in your life, because he had a wife and kids, and he was successful at both of those things.
Yeah, and that's a critical piece is to make sure that in a mentoring role, whether it's formal or otherwise, you are influencing the lives of other people, and we often don't realize that. We live by example. So having balance in between work, especially somebody who works in the music industry, that a lot of people don't even know what balance is. So having that is incredibly powerful.
Exactly, and I think that is it's more about a person's character and integrity beyond just what they can accomplish.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's really important. As far as a mentoring relationship with Karen, I think it probably started off more in that nature, where she, I think, did benefit a lot from things that I was able to show her. But as it turns out, it became more of a peer situation where I'm learning a lot about, artistic things that I've overlooked, especially in terms of her artistic purity. And I mean, I think that gets thrown around a lot, but
yep.
Karen actually doesn't care about the industry. She cares about the art. And at first I didn't believe it. I thought, oh yeah, well, deep down inside, if someone waved a record deal in front of you, you'd take it. You'd go for it in a second. And she's proven to me that is not the case. And when I realized and understood where that comes from, it changed everything for me.
And well, yeah, and I completely understand, because I know you guys, and I've gotten to know you pretty well, I think. I really agree with that sensibility about Karen and the ethics and where she comes from. Not to embarrass you, Karen, but take us back to how you guys met. How did you come together, and what made you decide to collaborate?
I found Frank on a really bizarre website that I'm not even sure exists anymore. It was called Songwriters Universe, right, Frank? Wasn't that what it was called? And I think that was might have been the only place that you accidentally had an email address hanging around the internet.
Yeah.
And so I recognized his name because I had a CD in my car. I had the crappiest little car, but I had an awesome stereo system in it. That's where my priorities are, right?
Typical, yeah.
And I had this CD. It was Tommy Lee's Methods of Mayhem, and it just slammed a lot harder than anything else and just, made me want to crank it up. And so I had recognized his name from that and some other work he had done. And so basically I hunted him down, and I had been working in studios up here, and he started sending me song ideas. Remember, frankly, even just some of the stuff off Playground Isolator were kind of song ideas you had sent me, like Dream Baby Dream, and there's a couple ones like that, right?
Yeah, basically it started out, I think, she had made contact through that email address, and I I didn't know. It's like I was into doing artist development as something that I did, and I was always interested in anything or anyone who's open. And that's the biggest thing. A lot of artists, are at the start of their journey, but they're really closed to input and guidance. And one of the things I realized right away was that Karen was very open to it.
I don't think I totally was in the beginning. I think I was bossy, and I got less bossy as I went along.
Well, as you got to know each other,
I imagine, those parts of how you accommodate each other really has mellowed between what each of you might normally have done on your own.
Plus, we're old, Kelly.
Well,
there is that, yeah.
No, you're not. But you're not.
Well,
but, you know, you guys are really, the two of you, such a dynamic duo. Since I've really been paying attention over the last couple years, I mean, you're really on the cutting edge of technology and creativity and recorded music production and video production. And, you know, that's a lot for, you know, people that aren't, shall we say, I don't know, more world-renowned. You guys have done incredible work. Can you elaborate a bit on your unique strengths and what your creative process is when you come together? What's it like to you know, really take advantage of each other's strengths?
Frank, I want you to take the lead on that because I'm actually curious
sure.
to see how you depict it.
Yeah, well, I think our roles as far as collaborators have fallen into a place that I think is really stable and is actually very scalable. Start with this, we really didn't have the kind of the vision that we share right now with the current record and the videos that we're doing. And but it came from a place of breaking everything down to kind of zero and building it back up. Like,
mm-hmm.
so essentially, and an idea, it's not like we started with something and we're, you know, messing with it to try to make it work. It's like, no, we're going to build it from scratch. And because the foundation is so solid with that, any one of us can bring to the table, which we may not even understand the full extent of it at the time, does and can fit in because we're on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're both there at the inception of the concept, it can, Karen could wake up tomorrow with a new skill set and be able to integrate it, and I would have the utmost confidence that it would be appropriate because she understands what it is the same way that I understand it. And so we don't have to worry about that. It's like sometimes when you do bring in someone new, there's some anxiety because it's like, oh, this person understands. They haven't been on the journey. And there's a million ways to do something and a lot of ways to do something great, but it's not really about that. It's to do it in the right way, to very consistent with the vision that that we started with. And
absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you have mastered the art of really understanding each other's sensibilities and strengths where, you know, Karen, I imagine you co-create from a creative vision when you concept the videos, for example, but Karen does a beautiful job putting, you know, with Mark, Mark is Karen's fiance, you know, the set designs and the costuming and creating Ian and the little characters that are going to be included in the videos. And then, you know, you're such a master, Frank, at putting the scale models together and the CGI. And I don't know how it works with the storyboarding and who takes the lead on that. But I tell you, I haven't seen videos that good that weren't done by, like, you know, Godley and Cream 30 years ago. I mean, they're really so professionally done. The Blackguard video.
Do you think we'll ever invite anyone else into this creative process? I always laugh because if you've seen the inside of both CDs where it says that no other industry people were harmed in the making of the record,
yeah.
it's funny because I think we're going at this rate that we're almost afraid to bring somebody else into it. Not that I don't think we would. I don't think that, I think we're open-minded, but it's just like, hey, you find somebody that just gets it, and for somebody like Frank, he gets it. He absolutely just understands what it needs to be, and I almost don't have to, like he said, I don't have to worry about it. So
well, I hear that, but
really,
I mean,
awesome,
if you were advised,
well,
yeah,
so
go ahead.
You know, to kind of outline, you know, kind of more practical sense of what happens, so people can understand. You know, everything comes back to the original intention of the story. So then if we were approaching, say, a video for a song, it would really center around the lyrical content of that and probably the impetus for that chapter in this in the saga. And then as far as, you know, how it's storyboarded, you know, Karen has given me a lot of artistic freedom to fumble around, essentially, because I'm learning new software to be able to depict the story. And you can see the progression from the first video to the, you know, the current ones that
yeah.
I've learned some stuff and I'm able to tell the story a little bit better, but it's really in lockstep with what, you know, the discussions that I have with her. And, you know, it needs to be a coordinated effort because they're building the physical props and I'm doing the digital stuff on this end. And
that's right.
And it all has to kind of come together in the end. So we need to kind of, we are on the same page. It's just a matter of, you know, figuring out, okay, do you need to build that or am I just going to create it digitally? Or is it going to be a combination where you're going to build it and then I'm going to scan it and then manipulate it.
I want to dive into the videos themselves a little bit later in the conversation because I want to flow some of my questions. I jumped a little bit out of sequence there, and that's my fault. But I want to just zero in next on the recent album. You guys co-produced Idiot Savant a year ago. I can't believe it's been a whole year. And you did a very successful crowdfunding campaign, I might add, with Pledge Music. It was beautifully coordinated and very successful. But we'll have some time to talk about that. But with the album itself, Karen, you've said that these 12 songs chronicle the pattern of childhood innocence, trying to get back to the spirit of play again. And I know that's been a theme in a couple of your CDs. Can you talk a little bit more about what inspired you both to explore this crucial topic?
I think there's probably two major. Well, there's probably more than that, but two major inspirations. One was my depression. That's for anybody that has the Playground Isolator record, I wrote that from a pretty nasty place. And when I shared it, I met a lot of people who worked through their depression as well. And so I think part of me, I felt some kind of responsibility to still take people on the journey.
Because
there is healing that happens with this next record. It sucks that I put that many years in between. Holy.
Well, you know, again, we don't beat ourselves up about things like that. But you said that it heals. And so,
another song that inspired the topic of it. It was the Logical song from Supertramp.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm amazed at how many young people know that song. Those guys have just superseded age.
It's never really come off the radio.
And everything. I know. It's just amazing. But that song starts off when I was young, it seemed that life is so wonderful. And, you know, then they sent me away to teach me how to be practical and sensible. And then by the end of the song, we'd become vegetables.
Right.
And I've always had an issue with how that song ended as much as I love the song. I'm like, that can't be the end for us. It could absolutely cannot be the end. And so I basically, the 12 songs that are on the record chronicle that song. If you listen to the record, they chronicle starting off in a very green kind of way and then getting back to crushing pennies on the train tracks again with crushing copper. That's where I think we need to end up. We don't have to end up like vegetables. We can end up in a spirit of play and back in touch with our passions and those things. So as far as what inspired the record and covering this topic, it's the need to get back there. There's a lot of sad people. There's just way too many sad people. And I believe that everybody has something that they're passionate about that we can get back in touch with. But maybe
an anecdote or a little personal story about how you yourself have experienced healing through music?
Oh, I think probably there's been countless musicians and artists who have inspired me. I could name, I have my top four, right, Frank? There's always my top four people who have been music and art has healed me. I always say Beethoven, Tim Burton, Beatrix Potter, and Freddie Mercury. And people kind of laugh when I say that. But those are people who were just courageous with their art but kept it kind of dark and cool still. That's a hard thing. But let me quickly just take you through the Playground Isolator thing because I was depressed, and it was through the writing of music. So there's how music helped me from listening to it. Just healing and being courageous. But with Playground Isolator, I was so depressed. And Sicko especially, there's a video that if people want to go look at it, if they can stomach looking at me in such a depressed state, on YouTube. Sicko was very difficult to write, and I wrote it cross-legged on a bed with a lot of crumpled up papers around me, and I was very sick. I was just trying to get rid of a lot of hurt. But then a song like Funeral Mute made me fall in love with writing again. That was actually, even though it was song number four on that record, it made me want to write again. And so the music that this cathartic process I was going through actually healed me. And that it can kind of come as a surprise even to yourself, because you think you're just wallowing in self-pity, but that's not what it's doing. It's healing you. And I've been to therapy, and I've, you know, had these mentors and all this thing, and music still is the number one thing I always go back to. So
Well, you know, it's true that music, it's proven out time and again that music is a key agent in healing, and it's a healing force. And, in fact, mm-hmm. it's the only universal language in the world that crosses cultural and language boundaries and barriers. So
yeah.
It's really quite powerful. And so you as an artist
Absolutely.
Have that gift, both of you as artists, of reaching people in audio and visual ways through these experiences. And it's more than just a craft. You're actually making an impact and creating a legacy, in a sense. Tell us about
Absolutely.
Ian, hero of the album. Why will listeners relate to Ian?
It's funny. I've had some people ask me if there was some of me in Ian. Well, of course. You know, I think for any writer, there's a little bit of you in it. But he's nine, and I picked the age nine for a reason, because for a lot of kids, especially boys, and Frank, maybe you experienced this, it's an awkward age for most kids, because many kids at that age become very deep thinkers, and they're also terribly misunderstood. But I like that age seems to sit right on the horizon of inspiration.
Right.
I think if a child is not parented, or like we've been discussing, mentored correctly, it can be really detrimental to their growth. And you sit in this bizarre place of having to do what you're told, and you're trying to find your way. But in this story, Ian has a lot of bad teachers, and yet he runs into a really great mentor who is this organ grinder. And he gives him some freedom, and he gives him creative space, and he teaches him how to look at music differently. And so that's why I wanted that nine-year-old boy. But he is a savant. So this time period sets some very bad precedents in our healthcare system, which is I could talk to you, Kelly, for 5 hours on my opinions of drugs and the healthcare system and all those things. But
right.
It's that the 30s have set a very bad precedent for how we're dealing with anything that's on the spectrum.
Anybody,
you know,
who was different
who
got
has,
institutionalized, right? Effectively.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a broad generalization,
yep, exactly.
But a lot of people did.
Yep. Yeah,
just
so
because they were misunderstood.
Think, oh, that's right. And maybe people think, oh, Karen's just doing some horror videos over there for shock value, but really the 30s were nasty. Like, it's just, and Frank, remember you were even doing some research on some of the mental hospitals from that time period and just, you know.
Well, that
cool
that informed
that
one of the videos, as I recall. You know, you actually shot footage of or did, you know, built your modeling around a 30s institution.
Yeah,
yes,
Frank, can you
exactly.
talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to have it reflect something in the time period and as well as the area in the world, and essentially that it kind of zeroed in on a particular asylum that the 3D modeled facility was patterned after. And I just dug in a little bit just to see what was going on at that time, and it was horrifying. Like, basically they built these huge facilities with all the right intentions, but they ran out of money to really maintain them and to run them properly, so they all got run down. So by the 30s it was really rough, and there's a lot of mistreatment, and it just makes for a really creepy setting, and certainly a great backdrop for a video. But I think the real, like, the message that we, you know, wanted everyone to kind of keep in mind is that even though those days are gone, there's, to some degree, the same kind of problems exist today, just in the manifesting itself in a different way. And I think that it's you know, as far as the video goes, it's just it's horrifying, it's dramatic, it's all the things that you kind of look for, and it's always a setting for the for a horror movie, but it's a good, you know, kind of backdrop for a video.
And this is the Blackguard video we're talking about, huh?
Yes.
Before we dive into the videos, because I really do want to spend a few minutes on that in particular, Frank, and some of the technical aspects of it, but let's go back one step to, for both of you, but probably this one leans to Karen a little bit. What do you think is at stake when we forget the importance of play, especially as children? And what are you hoping to inspire in those who listen to the album as adults about play?
Oh, I'm glad that you said both children and adults, because we're all children as far as I'm concerned.
Arrested development in some cases.
Yeah, no kidding. I think it's twofold: our health and our purpose. Those two things are probably what's at stake. It's what's really sad is how many people survive the day. They don't even know that they're not living a higher life, because maybe what they're putting in their body, the people they're associating with, the jobs, the cubicles they're in. And I think what we're hoping to inspire is, I would hope that someone could just take some time to reflect, maybe lie in the long grass for a minute. Not too many people have that, especially autistic. The parents of autistic children, they always say, if I can just sleep, that'd be awesome. We don't really give ourselves enough credit that if our focus is to live this higher life, and we actually think that way in our mind, and we tell ourselves that, that's the direction we're going to go. And it just seems we never start with just the thought of it. Like, how many people just sit quietly for a second and say, I want a better life. And I've had a pretty rough life, and music healed, and so I hope that this music's going to inspire that, because I would hate for it to affect more people's health. I would hate for people to not find their purpose. So I think those two things are at stake.
It's a wonderful thing when we give ourselves permission, and very few people do, I think, to make work your joy, your passion. If you can align those two things, you're way down the road. I mean, I'm privileged to do that. I've created my work around my passions. And yes, I work hard and sometimes too hard, and I don't, quote-unquote, play enough. But when your work is your play, somehow it's different. It's more balanced.
I get that. Absolutely.
The two of you are also playing while you're creating your work. You know, you really are.
It's kind of like I say, I live in the country. I don't need to have a trailer and go to a cottage. My goal is to make my everyday something cool, so that I don't have to be a weekend warrior. But I had spent 3/4 of my life being a weekend warrior. It's not like I just was born into money here and just I'm going to have a cushy little job. It's like, you do have to sometimes give up something.
Your dues,
and tell you work hard, you know, sometimes it's sleep. But yeah,
I think we've all done that.
All
three of us have done that, you know. But now, maybe you get to a certain point in your life where you do have a little more freedom, or you're just so driven to do it that you just start to build your life around more of a creative mindset. If you're lucky, you do that. But you know, this notion of play as adults reminds me of Pretty Woman, the movie, which I think just celebrated its 30th year anniversary earlier this year.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I think that one of the best parts of that film, if you recall, was, remember how Richard Gere's character was such a workaholic. He had no humor. He had no joy in his life. And when the Julia Roberts character entered his life, and she did things like take him out and took their shoes off and ran in the park at lunch and, you know, just things he would never do. And there were many examples.
Don't you wish more people would do that?
Yeah. Yeah, it really changed him, and viscerally so, and visibly so, and it changed the whole direction of, you know, the storyline. And that's just one of many examples that has, you know, sort of a pop culture reference, but adults need to play every bit as much as children need to be allowed to play. And I think music is a common thread. That's why you see people from 8 to 80 at certain concerts, like, it was a Taylor Swift concert recently. That was the case. Kenny Loggins. There's so many artists. 8 to 80, you know?
Yep.
So music is a key part of that. So I direct this a little bit more to Frank, but obviously the videos are a direct collaboration between the two of you. And my first question is, you did create a couple of videos, at least so far, to accompany each of the songs on Idiot Savant. Was it, you know, many bigger artists who have a lot more funding are now putting out CDs where they do a video for every song. Is it your intention? Was it your intention to do that? Because you've done several so far.
Yeah, absolutely. We've discussed that, you know, because it's a concept record, it's not like we're necessarily releasing singles the way that labels would do. We are launching each song based on with a video, and our intention is to do every, you know, each of the 12 songs to tell the whole story. And that's, you know, to me, it squeezes so much more life out of an otherwise, like, you know, you put out an album and it, you can get so much mileage out of it. And this is a way for us to, it's almost like revisit each song in a way that, because it's been a while, you know, actually, as time starts to fly by.
Well, exactly. But the way I see it, you're actually bringing the songs to life.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, it's challenged me. Like, I always feel, and I say this often, that the videos that I'm involved with are an extension of the music production, because it really comes from the same place. And you might on the surface say, well, how is that? Those are two totally different skill sets. But to me, it comes from the same place, because it's doing whatever it takes to get something to be presented in a certain way. Now, if it was just the record, it was, you know, you'd be battling with, you know, miking and mixing and processing in order to, and, you know, arrangements in order to get something to sound a certain way. In this case, you're dealing with, you know, video, you know, cameras and lenses and 3D animation and, you know, all these things that are very different, but very similar, because all a producer in music is someone who wants something to sound a certain way so badly that they'll do whatever it takes to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, with video, it's very similar. It's just different programs and some different gear. So,
but it's also a different set of skills, and you had to teach yourself all of that. I mean, you didn't go to a highfalutin school to learn all the dynamics of video production.
No, not at all. And it's a lot of trial and error, and it's not necessarily a
pretty
process.
I love the accidents.
Yeah.
Happy accidents, I call them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I feel the same way that I about video that I did about music production 20 years ago, when everything was new and you didn't really know everything, so you fumbled your way through. And
yeah,
there's something really, really great about that, because once you get into the industry and you're rubbing elbows with people who do this all the time, you can't help but to get somewhat jaded by it, even though I felt like I still love music. I still really, I can go to a concert and just be a fan, which is something that I think in a lot of ways, you know, just to throw back to what we're talking about, the, you know, spirit of play and, you know, being an adult, being able to play again. That's one thing I was never able to do, especially in LA, is to go to a rock concert and be a fan. Yeah, I'd always have to stand there with my arms crossed like a industry douchebag like everyone else.
I have a secret to tell you. I have never not done that, because I'm from the industry, right? So I'm always on the side of the stage or somewhere in the front five, six rows, you know, listening to, oh, my God, Steve Miller is playing a electric purple mandolin on Wild Honey. Or, gee, that the keyboard's out of key, or the guitar player missed that note. Or, I cannot just sit and watch a concert. I can't do it.
But
I used
you were
to
also
not be A&R, able to.
Right?
Yeah, but I also was a would-be record producer, right, who was the wrong gender. We've talked about that. So I still listen as if I'm sliding knobs up and down. You know, I still listen with a mixing ear. I isolate the tracks in my head.
It's hard.
It is
really hard.
It's difficult.
You know?
It's difficult, but it's I think it's possible with the right scenario. And also, you know, maybe a few drinks. Like, you really do have to kind of let go.
I'd love to try that sometime.
sometimes I'm like, I want to be a fan tonight. I don't want to be a producer. And
I'm amazed that you can turn that off, Frank. I really am. Kudos to you. You know. I mean, the cool factor. Yeah. I mean, the actual part of sitting there and not micromanaging the details.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, I used to be the worst audience member. Like, you know, the guy is just standing there and it's not like the band must, like, I don't know why bands want me to come to their shows because of that, but it's different now. I try to, you know, get something out of it, but I think.
But that's because Frank's getting back in touch with his inner child.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Back to that again. It all circles back.
Yeah. Well,
Karen, we haven't had a chance to talk about this as good a time as any. Didn't you and Mark go catch Motley Crue last week?
Yes, went to Motley Crue, Alice Cooper's show, and actually Frank was there as well. Yeah.
Oh, you were
the
all there.
Went.
So, I know how much Mark loves, and again, Mark is Karen's fiance, a drummer. I know how much he loves Tommy Lee. Were y'all acting like kids, or how was the experience?
Yeah, well, it was great for Mark to see the roller coaster, but we got to talk to one of the guys from Alice Cooper backstage, and he is a little bit of a kid, Tommy Henriksen. He's a bit of a kid too, and it was really fantastic to see somebody that has been in the business that long still talk about their production and their mixing and songwriting and stuff, even outside of the the big glitz and glamour. So yeah,
wonderful.
We tried to do it once in a while. Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah,
well. I'm really glad you guys got to enjoy that. But I do want to circle back to videos. I keep detouring sideways. There's so much to talk about with you guys. But, back to the videos. I mean, obviously, these are not accidental. You crafted them very carefully with the storyline and the props and the CGI and the whole shebang, the costuming. Let's talk about the props piece, because I think one of our listeners was interested in having you speak to that in particular. You know, how you structured the props, how you chose them, how you created them, why they were so instrumental in telling the story.
Well, the one thing I want to punctuate with everything that we do over here is we've had this saying forever and a day, right, Frank? Music is the boss. And in this case, the story is the boss. So
yeah,
anything that we do, we just defer to that. It's like, okay, well, the lyric, and if you listen to the lyrics in this record, it's pretty storytelling. So they kind of dictate everything. It's like, you know, is this how Alice felt falling down her rabbit hole? Well, I need to make a little Alice, don't I? and figure out how to do that. I am a hack artist. I love to paint. I love to do things like that. But I seriously, I've been broke my whole life, so I have to figure out how to do it. And it's out of necessity. Everything we do is out of necessity. So I have to, go to garage sales or go to swap meets or whatever to try to find these things. I told Mark that I wanted to pierce a carousel horse right through the middle of this piano that we built. And, oh, my gosh, it's the piano. Oh, I could talk about props for a long time. I'll try to condense it. The piano that's in the green video, Mark had built in the garage, and I wanted a carousel horse to pierce through the middle of it. So we had to actually go find this carousel horse, and we just drove all over the place just to try to find something cheap. So it's all really, it's a very DIY thing that we do over here.
I get that, but my gosh, nope. If you didn't know that that's what it was, you'd never know that. Because, I mean, you did, and what I love about what you did with the videos in the social media construct is that you both showcased what you were doing as you were creating the videos. And
while we were doing it. And you know what? That takes a little bit of courage, Kelly, to do that. And that's something I had to talk both Frank into, and I had to talk Mark into it, because both of those guys were the kids in school who hid their homework from people.
But nobody ever gets to see behind the velvet rope and experience what it takes to pull something like that off. Number one, you were bold enough to do that, which is phenomenal, and people ate it with a spoon and still will forever. You did it all yourselves. Frank had to learn the CGI, which you from scratch, which is an art in and of itself. You guys had to go find the props, create them, and build them as artists, DIY. I don't know anybody who has all the skills to do the whole thing like you guys did homegrown.
I think it comes back around to not caring what people think of you when you start to share that process. So
yeah.
If I share something that I'm doing, I understand that there might be some internet troll out there who's probably going to cut me down, but I don't care. And because the greater message has to be told. And so if what we're doing inspires somebody that they can go to a garage sale, that they can go to a swap meet, they're like, I think I could paint a doll. I can. Where do you get your Sculpey from, Karen? Oh, I just go get it at the art store here. I get this from, you know, and or I cut the hair off a Bratz doll to attach onto Ian's head. Like just whatever inspires somebody else to feel like they can do stuff as well without the fear of judgment or condemnation in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the thing is that if you can do your art boldly, the pros outweigh the cons, and it's so rewarding. Yeah,
I truly think that the videos themselves hold so much substance in them, not just because of the way they turned out and what went into creating them, but the fact that, you know, I think not everybody understands that Frank and Mark were backing you up in the videos, Karen. And
Oh my gosh, I couldn't have done this by myself.
They were the musicians, they were the producer, you know, Frank was the producer, you were doing all the video stuff, you were creating all the props. I mean, and yes, other artists have done their own thing, but I don't think I've ever seen anything come together as polished as the way the final products did, and you guys should really be proud
thank
of that.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
thanks.
Kelly.
They're just first rate, and my hope is that I can't wait to see the next one. By the way, where can people go to experience the videos if they haven't seen them and actually to get a copy of the CD?
Oh, KarenStever.com. Yeah,
KarenStever.com.
There's a video page there. Yep,
yeah.
There's a video page there. And Mark has actually done some lyric videos, too, if people are a little nosy about some of the lyrics that they might not understand.
And do you also have a YouTube channel?
Yep, there's a YouTube channel. But the videos for this, I'm hosting them on the site just so they're all in one place.
Got
if you
it.
Want to go see videos from, like, previous records, you can just, you know, type Stever into YouTube. But there's the first three videos, Green, and then we did Juggernaut, and then we did Blackguard. Those are on KarenStever.com under the video page.
And what's up next?
You know,
the next song that's going to become a video?
Scatterbrain.
When's that due?
Record. Oh, yeah, soon.
And I understand,
yeah.
Karen,
I'll
you're also
you
writing a book by the same name, Idiot Savant. What? Any idea about time frame for when that comes out and what can readers expect from it?
Well, it's time frame again. I don't know if this is just me getting out of due dates, but I really do believe that art has its own life and spirit in it, and it needs to come to fruition.
Ready. I don't mean to button you on timing. I was just curious. People
oh,
me,
I
like,
know
this.
You're excited though. I love
yeah.
that people are excited for these things. I sort of opted to do all my writing in this bizarre order where the 12 songs on the CD represent moments or scenes from each of the 12 chapters that are in the book.
Yeah.
And that's very bass-ackwards, right? The great thing about a book versus music and video, though, is that the readers are forced to use their imagination, and this is a lost art. I know, Kelly, you're an avid reader. I loved reading those C.S. Lewis books as a kid, or even something really intense like Flowers in the Attic.
Chronicles of Narnia.
Like Andrews. Yeah, all those things. And I felt like I was allowed to use my own imagination while I was reading them. So I'm excited to have the book be out there and people read it and hopefully get that same feeling, you know, because I write from that same spirit of just hoping to invigorate. And our whole goal with this record is not just to entertain, but to cause people to think. And more importantly, have the community
to feel
right? again. Yep. To feel
yeah.
again.
And
relate with
that element of
child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk
about
you.
Something they're really passionate about. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
and you know, the other thing I really love is that it's you're doing this whole project, Idiot Savant, so it takes a couple years. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares anymore. There's no more cycles in traditional music industry. But you're doing this in a transmedia way, right? Because there is the book, and there are the videos, and there is the CD, and there are the performances. And, you know, I think
yeah.
people
and
need
like
to understand that it's not one-dimensional. You don't just – people can put out a CD or a collection of songs, but it's so much more meaningful and impactful if you go at it the way you guys are doing it in this transmedia format.
I enjoy it. And I think that's the goal, right, Frank, is to just – enjoy our everyday.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think there's a different kind of satisfaction with working like this, and because it is a labor of love, it's still a labor. But I think anything that is worth putting time into like this is there's a bit of resistance. You know, it's not all just fun and games. Like. There's a certain amount of make us pulling our hair out, trying to figure out the best way to be able to pull this off and to, you know, again, facilitate the vision that it starts to get very specific, and you start to understand, okay, this needs to be this way. And I think all that under that umbrella is fun. Like, that's my idea of fun, and it kind of goes back to what you're saying, Kelly, about enjoying what you do work-wise. To me, there's no difference between doing something recreationally and working on a video, except that there might not be the adrenaline rush when you're sitting in front of the computer for 12 hours.
It's longer in coming, the adrenaline rush, but a lot more satisfying when it happens. And, you know, before we wrap up, I just have a couple more things to say. I mean, we talked about KarenStever.com for anybody listening who wants to learn more about Karen and, of course, have access to all these wonderful materials. But Frank also has a website, FrankGreiner.com, right, Frank? And what I love about Frank, I love many things about Frank, but one of the things I love about him is very analytical, very thoughtful, very detail-oriented. I remember when I first came across you, Frank, and knew about you, there was like a 9-minute video you did about guitars or something. I just fell down the rabbit hole myself, speaking about Alice, and listened to you talk about this. Your depth of knowledge in about music and the length she'll go to describe different techniques and lyrics and different meaning and all of this. It's just, you just have a great capacity for detail, and it comes through. If anybody wants to explore more about Frank, you know, some of that is up on the site.
Oh, thank
I'm
you,
so
Kelly.
Fortunate to work with Frank. I don't think he won't talk enough about himself, so I'm glad you do, Kelly.
I had to. Awesome. Had to. Somebody had to. that's the reason we're doing the interview here. Because I think you're, you know, Frank could be accused of being a best kept secret, and I want to help. Part of the reason we're doing this interview is because I really want to help turn that around a little bit and make more people aware of his gifts, and Karen's too, of course. But Karen's a little more outwardly obvious, you know. So, and by the way, guys, this is the first time in the 200 episodes of this series, this radio series that I've done, where I've ever had two people on.
Oh.
It's always one-on-one. So
we've done all right then.
We managed to break new ground. You know, the most important question I like to ask, I leave for the end. I ask every guest, and that really is what comes next for you guys in the spirit of creating a legacy and a body of work. You know, what comes next behind Idiot Savant? Are you going to work for others and hire yourselves out as the next Godly and Cream? What one project or collaboration haven't you started that you dream about creating on a broader scale?
Well, mine's always so obvious. Frank, you go first.
Well, to me, it's hard to answer that question because what next is generally not something where ask ourselves that question. It usually presents itself as something very obvious. As far as us together collaborating, you know, after doing something like Idiot Savant, and as we continue to go down that road, you know, what is beyond that point, I'm not sure, but it's going to be something pretty cool. It kind of has to be because, you know, we have to up the stakes as far as what, you know, what will stimulate us creatively.
Absolutely.
And I think the good part is that I can't answer that question. That's the exciting part.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely
right.
I'm
the same way. I got to tell you that over all of my life, I have been riding life's wave. I'm tremendously and creatively driven to do the things that I imagine in my head, but I have become like this little kid where I'm wide-eyed and I'm full of discovery and I'm eager to jump on the next train to see where that takes me. Like, children don't wake up on a Saturday morning and necessarily plan out their whole day. If their imagination is on fire, they roll with it. But the key is to get your imagination rolling again. And, you know, when I talk about those four people that I think have inspired me, obviously I would love to work with Tim Burton. I think he's somebody that, well, he's only the only one that's alive out of my four inspirations, so he's my only potential right there. But I would love to have him involved in some more visual stuff, because not just because he's this mega talented and super successful guy, but because I think that he was actually in touch with his inner child a very long time ago, and I think he would understand the importance of getting that message out. But he still somehow manages to remain dark and cool.
This is why he did the Pee-wee movies.
Yeah.
You know, Pee-wee Herman. This is why he did those. But I do hope that he will experience some of the work that you guys have done together, because I think he'd really appreciate it and get into it. And if I have anything to say about it, that's an action item that we can take between us at some, you know, offline here, and try to make that happen, because I really don't, it's not complicated to get this stuff in front of Tim and say, hey, check this out, you know.
Again, it's not just because he's this talent. It's because I think he just would get it on a deeper level. And I can't work with people on a superficial level. I don't care who they are or how big they are. I can't work with that.
Aaron. No, I just think that I hope what I'm saying is I'd love to help you make that a reality, because I understand why you want it. And I think he would appreciate that.
Well, and frankly, I've always said that our creative train is moving forward, whether somebody jumps on it or not. So we
That's
may
for
end
sure.
up just doing a movie all by ourselves, you know? You never know.
That's just it. You guys are demonstrating how it's doable, and you don't need mega budgets and big studio budgets to pull something like, or big label budgets, to pull off the kind of outcome you've created and the results you've generated. And in and of itself, that's probably the most impressive thing, in my opinion. But again, not to overlook the importance of the play, and the whole theme that we've talked about throughout, that's equally critical as the finished products, was your intent behind doing all of this. So I want to thank you guys for taking the time this evening to join us on the show. It's really been my pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Kelly. Thanks so much for having us. Thanks for jumping on, too, Frank. I know your schedule is always madness.
Yeah, Frank, too. I especially appreciate you taking the time, because I know how busy you are. But everybody have a wonderful rest of the week. I want to thank our listeners, as always, for joining us, and our wonderful show producer, Jessica Mastors. And we will hear you all again next week on the next edition of All Access Radio. Good night, everybody.